Yeah, baby, let's get to it. Put a smile on your face, because it is Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Yeah, welcome in, good people of upstate South Carolina. Hello, America, shout out the world. What a day. Let's get to it. Everything's amazing. The world's an amazing place. The world is a spectacular place. And I hope it's just nothing but positivity and good things for you today. You deserve it. You deserve it, everyone listening right now. If you are here, up, awake, and listening to Sports Talk at 6 o'clock in the morning, you deserve all the best things in the world. And if you like me last night, sat in your football watching chair of choice, if you like me last night were reminded that A, football is amazing, and B, also what a fickle mistress she can be, I gotta tell you, I think that if I was Anthony Richardson, I would hate everyone and everything this morning.
I was trying to make my pinky go at that angle.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you could, but yeah, it would probably take getting sacked by a 240-pound edge rusher who, I don't know, maybe block a guy.
Maybe
block a guy.
That's like the cleanest sack you're ever going to see.
Yeah, I mean, that is, and as long as I've been watching football, if I was...
There it is. Okay, yeah, the receiver ran right by 90, didn't even chip him.
The tackle tight end, I'm not sure if they were tight end heavy on that side or not. The tackle tight end on that side, whoever was the exterior blocker, blocks back to the inside. I don't know if it was the running back or the receiver. I got to tell you,
It looked like a receiver number. Yeah, because they just showed it, and he walked, I mean, within an inch of 90. He could have chipped him, and it might have saved his quarterback.
I don't think, and I, you know me, I like some X's and O's. I try not to get too terribly deep into the X's and O's on the radio because I know that the overwhelming majority of football people don't necessarily care about the X's and O's so much as the scores, the storylines, whatever. But I don't think you have to be an X's and O's wizard to know that the breakdown of that play, when Scott Steichen and the Colts get into the office this morning and start watching tape from preseason game numero uno, I don't know that you're going to have to be a wizard to know that the breakdown, the diagnoses of that play. I'm watching it right now. So they're going tight end on the right side, edge rusher over at the linebacker spot, and the defensive end lined up in a 9 technique, which means he's way out wide, right? 9 technique is full body outside of the tight end, and usually you're angled in, right? Like, you have given yourself, your nose, your body is pointed at where the quarterback will be at the conclusion of the dropback. And a 9 technique on a rush like that is designed to do a couple of things. Number one, if a running back crosses your face to get to the outside, running a wheel route, running a flat route, whatever, you can hit that guy because you're on his angle. You're on his path. You can hit that guy, disrupt the emergency option of the quarterback. Or number two, if nobody crosses your face, then you are in a place where you are going to be the fastest possible person to get from where you start to where the quarterback is going to end the dropback. A 9 technique is purely, we think you're throwing the football here, and we want to disrupt it. Either by taking away the edge of the flat guy, your dump out, your emergency spot, by chipping him or hitting him or demanding, as should have happened on this play, demanding that he picks me up as a blocker. Hey, man, you want to know how football works or not? So this guy, not you specifically, I'm saying that smartastically.
I was going to say, receiver, chip the guy, the defender, you save your quarterback. That's really what it comes down to. You went right past him. You saw him there. There's no way you didn't see him. That dude is huge. it's on the receiver for not chipping that. Would he have stopped the sack? Maybe not, but he would have at least slowed the guy down a little.
In a spot like that, obviously everybody's sitting on an assignment. Usually a running back or a wing back in that spot. And I believe he was lined up in the running back spot there. Usually a running back in that spot is going to have the assignment of, this is your route, but if there's a free edge rusher, and it's not just the 9 technique on the DN, they may overload the blitz to that side. They may bring the 9 rusher and then an extra linebacker. You're outmanned over there. If you start your route and recognize that they have an extra rusher locked on that side, your job is to hit that guy and either outright block him and sacrifice the route, and our quarterback will see that and know, all right, I don't have the emergency option, so I got to throw this thing into row J. Or you chip him, you slow him up enough to buy the quarterback a second, and then instead of running your full route, you just clear to the other side, turn around, and turn it into effectively like a screen or a dump to you. He just runs right by the dude. The tight end on that side blocks down to the outside linebacker. They got a defensive end off a 9 technique who runs at Anthony Richardson. And when I tell you that whatever game film, if you're a head coach, whatever game film that you had as your go-to example of what an open field form tackle is meant to look like, that you've showed your players to instruct them on what an open field form tackle looks like, go ahead and delete that and download that, because that was spectacular. I was kind of laughing because I'm watching the broadcast and I'm watching this when it happened. I had I had that game on one TV. I had the other game on the other TV. I had that one on the big TV. And I watched this happen, and my favorite part is I'm watching on NFL Net, is most of the preseason games that are like on the net, they're usually picked up a relay of local coverage of the game, right? A lot of the guys are going to hear.
Whoever the home team is, you're going to hear their home broadcast.
Whoever you're watching as the home team, usually it's going to be their broadcast of that game. So that game last night, obviously being broadcasted with the voices of a couple of Ravens dudes behind the mic.
Yeah, no more proof of that than when a Philadelphia announcer says Joe Burrow with an errant pass when he threw it to T. Higgins and T. Higgins just missed it. I mean, it was right there. The one pass that Joe Burrow missed. It was, yeah. You get local guys, you get some local flavor, and you get some local bias.
So when Njobu comes off the edge and puts his face mask through the chest of Anthony Richardson, my favorite part about it is the play-by-play guy for the Ravens is like, oh, it's perfect. You cannot do it better than that. He's on the 9. He recognizes the running back's not going to chip him. He recognizes the tight end's blocked down. He's got a free run at Anthony Richardson. Chest to numbers, wrap up the arms, drive to the ground. It's perfect. And the color guy goes, yeah, well, you know, next time, I'd really like to see him try to punch for the football. Try to knock the football, get the old strip sack fumble. And I'm like, dude, Richardson had the ball covered up. This is one of those spots where I'm like, I get what you're talking about, but the strip sack fumble would be if Richardson had the ball up ready to go. That was just such a hilarious moment of what happens when you get a dude on a microphone who's just like, you clearly know where he stands. You know, I'd really like to see. All he did was come off the edge, scoop by a running back, scoop by a tight end blocking down, and demolish their starting quarterback and get him out of the game with a perfect, clean form tackle. And homeboy's like, yeah, but I'd like more. All right, big dog, relax. Like, he had the single highlight play of night one of week one of the NFL preseason. That's going to be the play that's going to be replayed all weekend long. Not just because of the strips or because of the perfectly executed sack.
Richardson was not looking very good. So, you know, maybe he saved himself looking as bad as he appeared to be heading towards.
I mean, he was what? He was 2 of 3?
That looked horrible.
He was 2 of 3.
I mean, there was such a difference when Danny Dimes came in. It's like night and day. So it was probably...
He was 2 of 3?
It did not look good. Did not look...
His 2 of 3?
He looked nervous. He looked out of place. And so good
I just
to
want
see.
To make sure you are ready to call it. After 3 passes, you're like, nope, we're done here. Danny Dimes is the guy after 3 passes.
Listen, he proved enough that he was in there that Danny's getting a job. He is. I mean, for sure.
I can't figure out.
We'll see if suddenly that pinky takes a little bit longer to rehab than it should.
I can't figure out where this is coming from. Because I genuinely cannot imagine a world.
Richardson's not a good quarterback. That's where it's coming from. He wasn't when he was. I mean, and he's injury prone.
He threw 3 passes.
Is he not injury prone?
Let me finish. He threw 3 passes.
If you want to call him that.
Let me finish. He threw 3 passes, and an unblocked 245-pound NFL defensive end hit him like a Mack truck. Through no fault of his own. Like that, what do you want?
Maybe the team doesn't respect him like
that. By the way,
maybe they should have blocked. I'm not saying he let that guy go by.
Yeah, maybe they should have blocked.
Yeah, they should have.
But my point is,
it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, the way he was playing,
he threw 3 passes.
It was not.
Lonzo, we are 12 minutes into the show. Is it fair for me to go, you suck today, bud? Why don't you head back to the office? You suck today.
I'm sure you think that all the time. So I never think that about you, though. I always believe.
Don't
that
you try to even make a, me even, look like a super villain here.
Even in a bad, when you're in a bad mood, what do I do during the breaks? It's okay, man. You got this. It's not as bad as you think it is. You can't say that I don't do that. So,
like me, every time Lonzo makes a mistake, you guys should. I take us off the stream.
I get side-eyed.
I cuss him out as if I am like a sailor in the World War II Army. Navy? Because that's where sailors are?
If looks could be translated into words, you do that all the time. So trust me.
I'm
on the receiving end of it. So, yeah, I mean, I think you can tell within a few plays how bad someone's going to be, and he was not looking good. Danny came in. He took over the offense. It looked much better than what it was under him. And I don't want to see anyone get hurt, but – he probably wasn't going to play that much longer anyway with as bad as he was playing.
I am really optimistic that my boss is now, and if I ever end up anywhere else in the future, my bosses in the future have more patience than Lonzo does. The guy threw 3 passes.
It's not the first time he's been on the field.
Plays.
He's not a rookie. He is not a rookie. There's a reason why he's fighting for his job.
Correct. And as I pointed out yesterday, the number one wide receiver last year for them had a broken freaking back. That's the guy they threw out there as number one. Listen, I am not on the platform.
That's a man right there playing with a broken back.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Michael Pittman Jr. is a dog for what he did last year. But I think the point is, much like with my special baby boy Bryce Young, with sunshine down in Jacksonville, I think I am willing to say, yes, Anthony Richardson was bad last year. Ain't no doubt. Just like B.Y. was bad in year number one. Just like Caleb Williams was bad in year number one. I think, this is a theory I'm willing to float right now. I think the great one saw the success of C.J. Stroud in Houston his rookie year, and that's just your bar of expectations for young quarterbacks now.
Excuse me. There was a quarterback last year who was really good as a rookie, so you can't just put it on C.J. Stroud. There have been a history of usually not good play from rookies, but there have been a couple lately that have been really good.
Right, but I think that, well, there are a couple.
Right.
A couple. But I think the point here is...
Sample size, small, but...
No, it's not.
2 years in a
no,
row.
No, it's not. You're wrong.
We've had really good rookies.
The sample size is every rookie quarterback. That's the sample size.
Yeah, but...
You're saying listen, the two guys are the two guys that count.
It starts when I start keeping track of it.
Lonzo just took the chart of rookies and then Sharpied one section of it. He hit him with the old Sharpie on the end of it there. I like that.
That's a lot of people do that. So, yeah, that's
it. No, not a lot of people do it. Sample size is real small. It's only the ones that I track that count.
I know you know a lot of people, but I don't know if you know a lot of people. So, I mean, you know.
All of that being said, my guy threw three passes. I'm not making the argument Anthony Richardson is Bryce Young. I'm simply
saying. Right now, if you had to pick who's starting, if you were the guy who made the choice between those two, who are you picking?
I'm not going to because I've seen Anthony Richardson throw three footballs. And oh, by the way,
he
was two of three. That's 66%.
You haven't. I mean, is this his second year or third year?
Third. But the first year, I got to go back. Who was the guy they had the first year? My brain is.
Richardson started as a rookie, if I recall, and he got hurt and missed the rest of the season. I could be wrong.
I believe you are correct. But again, the point to this for me, he entered the league in 2023, threw his first touchdown pass to Michael Pittman Jr., ran for a touchdown. Also got picked off in that game against the Houston Texans, by the way. Was declared out in week three due to a concussion sustained in week number two. In the next week, all he did was return against the Rams, record two passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown, erase a 23-point deficit, and lose in overtime 29-23. His rushing touchdown of the game marked the first time in NFL history that a rookie quarterback scored a rushing touchdown in each of his first three starts. But hey, guys, he looked real bad in three passes yesterday.
When does he get hurt and is out? I thought for sure that happened soon after that.
I am looking for that right now. After two losses behind Joe Flacco, the Colts announced that Richardson would be the starter for the remainder of the season. No, that was not last year. That was, I got to go look it back up. I actually think he finished 2023. I'll look it up. It doesn't matter.
I think he's had an injury every year. I don't know that that makes you injury prone, but I guess it's a matter of opinion.
I'll tell you right now, if I got tight ends and running backs who either are blowing assignments or a play call that has the end result of, yeah, nobody block an edge rusher and just let him run like a dump truck over our quarterback, I don't think Ben Roethlisberger is getting out of that one unscathed last night. Here's the risk you run as a GM. Full season, Shane Steichen gets a full season with Anthony Richardson. The Colts get a full season with Anthony Richardson. And because of three passes and being hit by a freight train of a human being that was unblocked, you risk putting a guy on the bench who might actually be better this year. In return for Danny Dimes, is that the move? I wouldn't make it.
By the way, it doesn't matter who they start. I think the Colts are going to be bad.
I do agree with that, too. All right, let's take a break. We got a lot of NFL to break down from yesterday, including Joey the Fossil Lover Burrow, who looked like an absolute maniac last night. I don't know what to tell you. The Bengals are going to score 100 points a game, and they might go 8-9. We'll talk about them. We'll talk about some of the games tonight, over the weekend. Talk some Panthers. Rashad Beard at 8:40. Going to be busy. Don't go anywhere. Rob Lonzo and you, the Rob Brown Show's on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate, y'all. So we opened up talking a little bit about the Indianapolis Colts 24-16 loss to the Baltimore Ravens. Again, scores don't matter. The games do. Okay?
Are you a junkie? Do you have a gambling problem if you gamble on preseason?
No.
Okay.
And let me tell you why. Because I obviously did not log any bets last night, but there were bets to be logged last night. For instance, you're ready for an easy layup of a bet? Here's an easy layup of a bet. Anytime you see the Ravens listed as a plus money bet to win the game in the preseason, because their head coach, John Harbaugh, a.k.a. Other Harbaugh, is a maniac. Like, he wants to win. preseason games. The Ravens went into that game last night as like a plus 2.5 point. They were like, I don't remember the exact number, but it's like plus 115, plus 120 on the money line to win that game. The Ravens treat preseason games, and I don't know if this is a common mentality or mentality that will become common or what, but the Ravens treat preseason games like regular season games. Like, the Ravens are going to try to go 3-0 in the preseason. So if you ever see Baltimore as a plus money line favorite, you pick them to win every preseason game. John Harbaugh has said many times, I think the attitude you carry into games in the preseason is the attitude you will carry into games early in the regular season. So we're going to go out there, and even if I'm not going to play my starters the whole time, we're going to go out there and try to win the football game, and they coach it to win the game.
Do you have a problem with that? I don't have
I don't have a problem with it at all.
If there's a winner or a loser, I want to be the winner. It doesn't matter what it is and what kind of game it is. If there's a winner and a loser, I want to be the winner.
So this is the interesting annual debate about the preseason, and I think it's a fair and interesting conversation. On one hand, not only do I want to win everything that is winnable, I will say this: for all of the headbutting that Lonzo and I do on the air, we both have the same mentality, which is why this show works and why we work well together. Because the mentality is, we want to win everything. We go at each other on the air because we both want to win whatever we end up stumbling into a debate on. At the same time, we also want to win a buttload more crystal trophies to bring back to the radio ranch. So it works, right? Yes, I want to win every game. But at the same time, I think that you must approach situations with a level of pragmaticism. I think you must approach every situation. I'm not just talking about preseason football. I'm talking about in your life. I think you must approach every situation in your life with some level of thought to what the future holds based on what happens here. So on one hand, do I want to win? Sure. And I think it's less about finishing the preseason at 3-0. I think it's more about, and I agree with Harbaugh on this take, I want my guys in the zone of this is the mentality we're going to take into a game. And again, the reason I love the NFL preseason is because I think at the end of games, especially, I mean, you could see it last night, at the end of games, the football field is predominantly filled up with 22 dudes who were out there playing for their bleeping lives. There's a lot of guys who got onto the field last night who will not be on a football team in 3 weeks. They may not play football ever again after 3 weeks from now. And so that mentality's there at the end of the game, but especially if I'm going to play my starters, yeah, I want them to go ahead and get used to having the mentality of when we put spikes into the gridiron, your brain should be telling you to go be a killer. And if I can get you used to that thought process now, then it's going to be less of a challenge in 4 weeks when the regular season kicks off. It is going to be less of a challenge for me to get you into that mentality. So I appreciate that and respect that. But I also do have to, I also do have to approach it with some level of, if I keep Joe Burrow out there because I want to win the preseason game, if I keep Lamar Jackson out there because I want to win the preseason game, if I keep the boys out there so that I can build up a 21-point lead, and there's sometimes there's justification for that. Maybe I got my second unit out there playing defense in the third quarter, and I build them a 14-point lead. I want them in the mentality of, this is how we're going to play defense to protect the lead, right? Like, there's situational reasons that you might do all this. But what I can't have, what I don't want to have, is a situation where I send out the first teamers, a situation where I've got, you know, whoever out there catching passes. And again, the Ravens, I don't think the Ravens used starters at all last night. I think they were all two unit from the beginning. But I think you have to be to some degree pragmatic, because I do not want to send my starters out there, exhaust them, and potentially get them injured, because I'm trying to win a game that at the end of the day, whether you want to win or not as a coach is irrelevant.
What do you mean exhaust them? Do you mean go out and do their job? I get that if you decide you don't want to play your starters because they're your starters and you know that they're not going to gain anything out of playing other than getting some game conditioning. But I don't understand what.
You don't understand how getting tired works?
I don't get.
I feel like you do.
You're getting tired comment. I don't.
You don't?
I mean, you know.
Lonzo, you played football.
Yes,
I know
that
for a fact.
Yes, I did.
Did you not wake up after some games the next morning and go, son of a biscuit, I'm hurting today.
I don't believe I've ever said son of a biscuit. And after thinking, it's more like,
Okay, but yes, that. So that, except for lined up across from you, is not an 11th grader from Smithton High School. It's Max
oddly,
Crosby.
Oddly specific.
I don't know. What if that was?
Is that a high school that you played against?
Smithton? No, I just said some syllables.
What,
there.
What I'm saying is, who cares if they're tired? That's their job, and you got to get in game condition. That's one of the reasons why preseason's there, is so you can go out and see how the team is gelling against another team. And see what the conditioning is like.
Because
if you're out there for a series and you're blown up, then there's a problem.
I'm not disagreeing. I don't think I'm talking about fatigue from the standpoint of having to suck gas out of an oxygen tank on the sideline. I'm talking about fatigue of, God, I just got hit by an NFL defensive tackle 60 times in a game. It's going to stack up. That is why injuries continue. That's why injury frequency continues to go up week by week in the NFL season. Wear and tear is a real thing. So that's kind of the point that I'm making, is this is what a lot of coaches in the preseason, this is why every coach has a different mentality about who is going to play when, how much, against whom, whatever, right? Like if I'm John Harbaugh and I'm going to get Lamar some snaps, I want him to have some time. I'll keep it a buck. They're on the road at Dallas in 8 days in the next one. How much and where Lamar Jackson plays in that game may also largely be predicated by, is Micah Parsons playing? And if he is, how long?
See, this is opinion. I don't think they do that. I think every preseason, coaches decide, okay, this is the game. We're going to play all our starters, and then we're not playing them again. And it used to be, if I recall, like game three, and everybody did that. And now, because there are only three games as opposed to more, it's varying. Like, are we going to see Joe Burrow again? I don't know. They played their starters. They may not play them again.
I'm not disagreeing with you. What I am saying is, it's kind of like, to me, the approach to a preseason is kind of like a game plan. I'm going to go into a game with a game plan. This is what we want to do on offense. This is what we want to do on defense. We're going to go into this game with that game plan. And also with the understanding that if we go out there wanting to do X and X doesn't work, we may have to pivot to Y. And then we may have to pivot to Z. And that may happen on both sides of the football. So, yeah, I'm 1,000% going to go into the preseason with the mentality of, all right, we're getting our first stringers out there for X amount of plays in game 1, 2, or 3, and they're going to play for this many series, and it's this, that, and the other. But I'm also going to adjust that based on what's happening in that game. If I want to trot Lamar out in game 2 on the road at the Cowboys to give him just a little bit of knock the rust off against another team, cool. But I'm probably not as inclined to leave him out there for maybe the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 series I planned for if I find out that Jerry Jones got over his ego and got Micah Parsons signed and Micah's going to play the whole first half. Well, I don't want to run the risk that in getting Lamar XP, he gets Anthony Richardson's by Micah Parsons. Like, that's what preseason to me is for. All right, we talked about the Colts. We talked a little generic preseason philosophy. When we come back, I don't know that I am more interested in a football team that I am not a fan of or cover in the NFL this year than the Bengals. And it's a direct result of last night. I was already intrigued by the Bengals because I said, yeah, I think this offense is going to be good. After what I saw last night, holy crap, dude, the Bengals are going to be the most interesting story in the NFL. And we'll talk about why when we come back. Plus, we got some other stories from last night's preseason game number uno. We'll set up night numero uno. We'll set up tonight, this afternoon, Carolina Panthers included. We'll get ready for Saturday and Sunday's NFL preseason games. And we got some college football. Dabo was big mad yesterday, you guys. And I'll tell you why. Play the audio, react to that. All that more coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Big Daddy Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Yes, I know I blew that. I was really excited. I forgot until I opened my mouth to say it about the Big Daddy Brown Show.
It's because you're afeard of the curse. That if you say it so many times,
I'm afeard of
the
curse.
You're afeard of the curse.
Yep.
Because
if
there's a curse, afeard's got to be attached to it. Sorry I didn't go southern there, but I should have. If we suddenly drop off, I mean, it's early, so there's not that many people in the stream right now, but if suddenly drops off, you know it was that.
I always blame me. It'll work just fine. All right, we got a lot we're talking about.
I wish people would catch on and then stop watching on purpose so he'll
you
stop.
You wish people
yeah,
that
just
was...
So, just so you'll stop saying that.
Stop watching
yeah,
on
I'm,
purpose.
Yeah, I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of time, especially if they pop back in after you stop saying it.
A little self-sabotage never hurt anybody. The Rob Brown Show on your radio, it is the Fan Upstate. We're going to talk,
Beastie
obviously...
Boys in my head now.
Quite a bit of National Football League football on the radio program this morning with the NFL's preseason officially underway. We do a lot of college football coming up later on in the show. Dabo Swinney was big mad yesterday. I'm going to tell you why. We'll react to his comments at a presser down there at the U.
I can't wait because I don't know. So, I can't wait.
We will get to that a little later in the show. We will talk a little South Carolina football as well. Lulu Kesson said something yesterday on the show that has kind of stuck with me, and I wanted to address that. We'll talk about that later on. It is going to be busy on the program, but a lot of NFL here in hour number one as we react to NFL preseason week number one and NFL preseason week number one night. Number one that went down last night. 34-27, the Eagles knock off the Bengals. Once again, scores don't matter. Results don't matter. The games do. In what I thought last night was to some degree shocking, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized, no, actually it does make sense that Joe Burrow would be trotted out. The first teamers for Cincinnati would be trotted out for as long as they were trotted out for. Joey B stayed out for a couple of series, went 9 of 10 for a $123, two tutties, no picks on the night. And that was before they switched to former Atlanta Falcon Desmond Ridder. Jake Browning got some time down the stretch. They threw 40 passes, did the Bengals last night, just to put that into comparison's sake. The Ravens ran the ball 42 times and threw it 16 last night. So just to put into perspective how teams address their preseason activities. Joe Burrow, 9 of 10, a $123, two tutties, no picks on the night. Now, I do think it is important to point out that the Philadelphia Eagle defense ran out some of their starters, but not all of them. There was no Cooper DeJean out there last night, but you did have some names like Jeremiah Trotter Jr. who were out there, who I don't think is going to be a starter, but I think he is likely going to be a heavy use role player. Not against the Eagles' starting defense. But Joe Burrow was dropping dimes last night. And this has, again, not against the Philadelphia Eagles starter, this has increased my interest in this team. It's increased my interest in this team because, and I mean this when I say it, I genuinely think if Joey B stays healthy, and if last night was a good indication of what we are going to see out of Joe Burrow, out of Ja'Marr Chase, out of T. Higgins, et cetera, in the regular season. This team might potentially put on the football field in 2025 one of the most elite offenses we'll ever see. Really. They might throw out there one of the most elite offenses we see in a long time. I am talking about great. The reason that this team is intriguing for me is not just the fact that I think that they could very well be working towards having one of the best offenses in recent memory in the National Football League. It is also because I also think they're going to bring out one of the worst defenses in the National Football League. They got their deal done with their rookie draft pick, Ja'Marr Stewart. He is signed. He is in the fold. He's going to get PT this year. While he remains a mystery, Trey Hendrickson, I have to assume at this point, I think Trey Hendrickson's a Bengal and a starter this year. You're going to have, if Stewart is the guy they drafted him to be, although, again, edge rusher is the new quarterback of the defense, and I think teams are reaching for edge rushers in drafts nowadays. I think Stewart, who had like 2.5 sacks for A&M last year, is a good player. But I think if he came into the league 5 years ago, he's a second-round draft pick. We'll see if I'm wrong. What I think I can say at this point is the Bengals are going to bring out an offense, I think, that can routinely put up 40 points, 42 points a game. I do not think there are many defenses in the NFL that are going to be able to consistently stop the Bengals' offense. I also think there are very few offenses in the NFL that will not be capable of being better than the Bengals' defense. They were one of the worst defenses in the NFL last year, and they did little to nada to improve their defense this year. That's not even why this is interesting. This is interesting because if the Cincinnati Bengals are a bad football team this year, not even bad, if they're an average football team, if they're 9-8, 8-9, and maybe 10-7, and they don't make the playoffs, because I let's keep it a buck, they're not winning the division. We're all on the same board with that. They're not winning the division. But if they don't at least check in a wild card spot, with everything that's happened this offseason, remember, Joe Burrow had to basically beg T. Higgins to come back and play one more year. Had to practically beg him. We were having conversations this offseason where a lot of us were almost working under the assumption that T. Higgins was going to be available. We were discussing, not but 6 months ago, we were discussing with Rashad Beard, with you guys on the phones in the text line, we were discussing, hey, the Panthers could have a Clemson guy on the roster next year. They can go get T. Higgins. Add T to the mix. Like, he played his college ball in the Carolinas. He'll probably be excited about that because I think we were all kind of working under the assumption T was gone from Clemson. And the thought was, if T. Higgins is gone, Ja'Marr Chase probably isn't all that far behind. And if that team gets blown up because the two primary wide receivers go, yeah, this ain't it, Chief, and check out and take off, I wouldn't be shocked to see Joe Burrow next in line. I don't care if he's got a fat stat contract. I think as soon as he can get his way out of it, he's on his way out of it, and then maybe Joe Burrow is available. Now, as a Saints guy, that made me really happy. I'm like, hey, Joe, you already left Ohio once, went to Louisiana, and had good things happen. What do you say we run it back? But we'll see. I think Joe Burrow would be gone. On top of all of that, if this team is average, as I think they're going to be, you know me, I love me some Joey B. Not only is he, I think, and I think I'm comfortable standing on this, I think Joe Burrow is the best thrower of the football in the NFL right now. I think he is the best passing quarterback in the NFL. He's got underappreciated wheels, but I think Joe Burrow is the best thrower of the football in the National Football League. And if this team implodes this year, and I think anything less than a wild card berth in the playoffs would likely be considered an implosion, I think you might hit a point where the team implodes a little bit. Because you are sitting right now, comfortable saying, you're sitting right now with a generational quarterback. You are sitting right now with, no question, one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. I think a lot of us would argue Joe B is probably inside of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL. And I do think that a significant number of NFL dudes would make the argument that Joey B might actually be the best quarterback in the NFL right now. And that he's stuck on a team that, between the injuries the last couple of years and the fact that, by and large, they just haven't been good around him, specifically defensively, I think it could be argued that Joe Burrow's the best quarterback in the National Football League right now, but he's just been hamstrung by a defense that couldn't stop a high school team last year. If it goes south for the Bengals this year, and they have built themselves to allow it to go south this year, I think the fan base turns. I gotta think T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase said, all right, we've done everything we're going to get done here. We're out of here. If Higgins and Chase won out, I think you would start to see a lot of the other guys who are free agents say, well, if those boys are gone, we ain't got a shot. We went out too. I think you could see the exodus, and I think the exodus ultimately ends with Joe Burrow getting himself forced up out of Cincinnati and becoming a free agent and ending up somewhere else playing for somebody else as the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. And the Bengals would, I think, at that point, really have nobody to blame but themselves. I think it would have to be addressed by ownership and management that's entirely on y'all. This wasn't a matter of we set everything up and we had a bad coach. This wouldn't be a reality of we built a great roster on paper, but there was no chemistry. This 100% would be. Sometimes, and I'm not going to Pittsburgh Pirates say this specifically about any other team in any sport, but sometimes ownership looks and they say, we have a generational guy. He's selling jerseys. He's selling seats. He's selling merch. He's getting eyeballs on our team, and we're making money. Cool, we're good. We're good. They back it up. This is I laughed yesterday because I came across an op-ed from some guy in Pittsburgh where Paul Skeens is currently pitching for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Paul Skeens should be at the top of every conversation about great pitchers in Major League Baseball right now. Paul Skeens might be the best pitcher in baseball right now. And just in case you don't believe me, Paul Skeens right now has the best ERA in Major League Baseball, a 1.94. That's unheard of. Paul Skeens has 162 strikeouts. That is tied for fifth in Major League Baseball. He's a top five strikeout pitcher. And Paul Skeens has a whip of .93. That is the fourth best in baseball. Any of the major pitching analytics in Pittsburgh, Paul Skeens is a top 5, 4, 3, 2, or the best pitcher in baseball, depending on which one you look at. Much like a quarterback, if you have a pitcher putting up numbers like that, I expect success. With those numbers, tied for first best ERA in baseball, tied for fifth with most strikeouts, and tied for fourth for most for best WHIP. What would you expect Paul Skene's record to be as a pitcher? Because I'll tell you, it's below 500. He's 7-8. He's 7-8. He's 7-8. And so yesterday, I came across getting set for Bet for the Cycle tomorrow, where we're going to talk a bunch of baseball as we get inch ever closer to the playoffs. I was looking around because Paul Skene's last night gave up 7 hits, most in his career. They still won, by the way, because he's Paul Skene's, but he gave up 7 hits. And I was like, let me go check in what they're saying on Pittsburgh. And I read a op-ed from some dude in Pittsburgh who was like, you know, the Pirates need to go ahead and extend this guy now. Give him every dollar in your bank account to keep him around. And my thought was, if I'm Paul Skene's, I can't get the H-E double hockey sticks up out of Pittsburgh fast enough. I'm kind of thinking Jamar and T. Higgins might feel that way about Cincinnati. And if they bail, Joe B's out too. And if Joe B's out too, not only did the Bengals have no one to kick in the groin but themselves for it, but good gosh, is that going to be like early 90s Bills levels of catastrophic failure if they take that guy and those receivers and win nothing with him. We're going to talk a bunch of college football. We'll get your water cooler cheat sheet up next. Top three sports stories we need to know. We're going to talk some college ball. We'll switch back to the NFL in hour three with Rashad Beard. All that after Lonzo. And I'm going to give him more than three passes worth of sports flash before I judge this sports flash.
I only get three, so I don't know how you're going to give me more than three. The Baltimore Ravens knocked off the Indianapolis Colts 24-16 last night. Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson left in the first quarter with a dislocated pinky finger after taking a hard sack. Former Giants quarterback Daniel Jones stepped in, going 10-21 for 144 yards, followed by former Duke quarterback Riley Leonard, who completed 12-24 for 92 yards and a pick. The Ravens' Keaton Mitchell rushed for 68 yards and a touchdown. Las Vegas and Seattle ended in a 23-23 tie, and it's not even soccer. Weird. Raiders quarterback Aiden O'Connell went 18 of 30 for 205 yards, a touchdown and two picks, while Drew Locke went 12-22 for 147 a TD and a pick for Seattle. The Atlanta Braves took game one of a five-game set over Miami with an 8-6 win last night. Pierce Johnson got the win after a single inning after starter Carlos Carrasco gave up 9 hits and 6 runs through 5.2 innings.